It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, there's a shortage of home care workers in Wisconsin and around the country. We'll hear about an effort in Wisconsin to turn things around.
First, it's our weekly look at national news and politics with hurricanes dominating the headlines. Congress is looking at recovery funding for Hurricane Harvey, while a series of Caribbean islands and the Miami area brace for Hurricane Irma.
Meanwhile, Congress faces a huge to-do list for the next month, including a response to the end of the DACA program announced yesterday.
Harry Enten is a senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. Harry, good to have you back.
My pleasure.
Before we get to politics, Harry, you've been watching Hurricane Irma and writing about it. It's already caused now major damage to some islands. It's on its way to make a close pass of Puerto Rico. Could hit the Miami area, the eighth biggest metropolitan area in the country. Can you talk about the uncertainty of predicting where a storm like this is going to end up?
Sure. You know, obviously our thoughts and prayers are with those people down in the Caribbean right now. But, you know, if you just look at historical errors with 4 or 5 day hurricane forecasts, you see that they're quite wide. In fact, the National Hurricane Center's forecast for their 5 day forecast, the track error, historically speaking, has been about more than 200 miles. And of course, if you go the span of Florida, say from Vero Beach all the way over to St. Petersburg, that's far less than that. So, you know, this storm, people should prepare for it down in the south, obviously in Florida. But it could go either way. It could hit the West Coast, it could hit the East Coast, it could go out to sea. But right now, the most likely path seems to be over the East Coast of Florida, if you believe the National Hurricane Center forecast, and I do.
We've already been hearing words like historic to go along with Irma. Can you talk a little bit about the scale of the storm?
Yeah, I mean, right now, obviously, it's a Category 5, which is the highest you can possibly get. Winds have been maxing out. The maximum sustained winds have been 185 miles per hour, and it's maintained its Category 5 winds for a very long period of time right now. So that in itself is quite historic. But the thing that I'm keeping my eye out on is that if, let's say, Hurricane Irma does strike the United States as a Category 4, it would be the first time in recorded history going all the way back to 1851 in which there were two Category 4 storms that hit the United States in one season, with the obviously the other one being Harvey that hit Texas just a few weeks ago.
And you write that Irma probably wouldn't cause the kind of flooding damage that Harvey did on the U.S. mainland anyway. Why not?
Well, the storm is just moving at a much faster pace. It's much more progressive. What allowed for the flooding rains to occur in the Houston area as well into southwest Louisiana was that the storm basically stalled. This storm should move significantly more quickly, but there would, of course, still be plenty of flooding rains throughout the state of Florida if the track right now holds into the Carolinas, and obviously the wind and the storm surge would create a lot of damage. So I don't want to downplay the dangerousness of this storm, but the flooding potential, while high, we're not going to probably see the same level of rainfall as we did with Harvey.
So as we watch to see what happens with Irma, and we hope and pray for the best there, there's also a political story unfolding in relief for hurricane season after Hurricane Harvey, and also whether or not raising the debt ceiling should be attached to that. Some politics at play between Democrats and Republicans. What's going on there?
Well, it seems like the political game is almost over in a sense, because Donald Trump, the Republican president of the United States, has said that, in fact, he wants to team up with Democrats and ensure that the debt ceiling is raised for the next 3 months so that Hurricane Harvey funding, relief funding, can be given to those people down in Texas and Louisiana, which, of course, was quite surprising if you've been following the political story at all, because even Speaker Ryan, as of this morning, said that that made no sense. And then, of course, just Trump came in and did what he wanted to anyway, which I guess is what we come to expect from this president. He doesn't exactly play by the normal rules of politics.
Yeah, this was a story that's been developing over the afternoon. It looks like at least some sources are saying President Trump reached this deal with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi in a room with Republican leaders watching, jaws dropping, literally or figuratively anyway. This is not what anybody expected to happen, I think, when we woke up this morning.
It's stunning because, you know, Donald Trump is supposed to be the leader of the Republican Party, and here he is striking deals with Democratic leaders while the Republican leaders of Congress are in the same room as him. And they have to be looking at each other going, what the heck is going on? But I think at the end of the day, what we just need to continuously point out is Donald Trump does what he wants to do, and it's not always going to be popular with the American public, and sometimes it's not going to even be popular with people in the same room as him.
Talking to Harry Enten right now from 538.com. And Harry, I mean, is this the future of the passage of legislation in Congress? We've seen Republicans on their own trying to get stuff done, like a health care repeal and replace. Hasn't happened. Is this maybe a passage forward?
I would say that probably not. Donald Trump, one day he's supposedly making a pivot, right? He's giving a speech where he sounds more presidential, and then the next day he goes back to being the same. Of course, who really knows, right, with him? It could be a case where maybe he is going to change tactics and maybe he is going to try and get more involved and maybe team up with some Democratic leaders. But if the past is any prologue with the current president of the United States, that's probably not going to be the case. For whatever reason, he just felt like doing this with Harvey. It could be that he saw that his approval ratings have risen a little bit because perhaps of his handling of the storm. In fact, his approval ratings on the storm themselves is among the best for anything he's done so far. So maybe he felt that. But who's really to say with Donald Trump, because he may change his mind tomorrow?
We'll get more into those approval ratings in a bit. But the president has reached a deal with leaders of the minority party in Congress, Democrats. But is it a done deal then that Republican leaders will go along and allow a vote on this deal as it stands?
Well, you know, we can't say necessarily for sure what exactly would occur. Obviously, if all the Democrats are on board and Republicans do allow this, the Republican leadership does allow it to the floor for a vote, then I do think that it would probably pass. Of course, you know, the Republican leaders may be facing pressure within their own caucuses to do certain things. But at this point, you know, playing chicken with the debt ceiling is a very, very not only difficult, it's probably a stupid thing to do just in terms of the economy of the United States. And with Donald Trump clearly saying where he stands on this issue, I wouldn't be surprised if the Republican leadership folded rather quickly. But again, we'll have to wait and see.
And just briefly before we move on, what is it the Republicans expressly are worried about in this sort of deal making with Democrats?
Well, I just don't think that, you know, they don't want to give up anything to Democrats without getting something in return. And they obviously want to see major slashes to spending within the federal government. And this doesn't do that at all. You know, it in fact raises the spending and they don't really get very much out of it. So, you know, it's a deal that's been done where it's really a one-sided deal. And so obviously, if you're part of the Republican leadership, that's not something you want to get seen done. You want to be able to get, you know, certain things that perhaps you don't want funded to, you know, slashes in those funding. And in fact, they pretty much just got nothing out of it except for obviously the Hurricane Harvey funding, which is good for the people down in Texas and Louisiana, but not necessarily good for the Republican legislative agenda.
Moving on to another big issue, immigration. Yesterday, Attorney General Sessions announced the end of DACA, the deferred action for deportation of people brought into the U.S. as children. Here's a listen.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded. The DACA program was implemented in 2012 and essentially provided a legal status for recipients for a renewable two-year term, worker authorization, and other benefits, including participation in the Social Security program to 800,000 mostly adult illegal aliens.
And so, Harry, with this announcement yesterday, the president and Jeff Sessions basically lobbing the issue over to Congress. And as we wait to hear what they're going to do, what does public opinion have to say about deportation and DACA?
Well, DACA itself is a fairly popular program if you look at the polling. You know, it depends, obviously, what polls you look at, but it's pretty clear from looking at all the polls that a majority of Americans do, in fact, support the DACA program, at least in principle, and that includes a number of Republicans. Some polls, in fact, find that a plurality of self-identified Republicans approve of the DACA program. But I should point out that in some ways this reminds me of some previous debates on particular issues such as gun control, where if you remember we had a whole debate a few years ago about background checks, and that polled ridiculously well, even among Republicans, but the Congress wasn't willing to pass something. And part of the reason for that was that on the issue of gun control as a whole, the American public was actually pretty evenly split, and on the subject of immigration as a whole, the public is pretty evenly split. So it's going to be rather interesting to see whether or not Republican legislators will go along with the polling on DACA in particular or on the polling on immigration more broadly. If it's on DACA in particular, they're going to pass something. If it's on immigration more broadly, then it looks a little dicey.
Could particular Republicans be looking at a situation where they could appeal to the general public by coming up with a fix to DACA here, but then really angering their main supporters, their base, and risking maybe even a primary challenge in 2018?
Absolutely. If you look at past primary performances among Republican legislators within Congress, we do in fact see there's a fairly high correlation between how they vote on immigration issues and their eventual fate in a primary. Obviously, there are other variables that go into that, but we do see a fairly high correlation in Republican primaries. With the more pro-immigration you are, the worse you do in Republican primaries. So obviously, if you're a Republican legislator, especially in a red district, you might be hesitant to vote for a bill that, although may be popular among the American public at large, may in fact be poison within a Republican primary electorate.
We're talking to Harry Enten right now from 538.com, looking at some of the top stories in national politics.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have family members affected by Hurricane Harvey or in the path of Hurricane Irma? What are you hearing from them? What do you want Congress to do when it comes to the 800,000 people affected by this DACA announcement? And what do you think should be the top priority for Congress in a busy season? Immigration, taxes, debt ceiling, you name it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we continue our conversation now with Harry Enten from 538, looking at the latest news in national politics.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this deal between the president and Democratic leaders in Congress on the debt ceiling and hurricane relief? What should Congress do when it comes to DACA and the potential deportation of 800,000 people who had been protected somewhat by that program? What should be the top priority in Congress? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Gary is with us in Fitchburg. Gary, hi.
Hi. I have a point of view that perhaps is not understood as a left point of view. I'm someone that's been very progressive all my life, and I would say left-leaning with some intelligence behind it. I think it's wrong for the Democrats to assume that everybody on the left or even middle of the road is all on board with hundreds of thousands of people coming in here. We can no longer even take care of our own citizens, let alone having to have 900,000, I'm sure. If you include all the other illegals, it's an unbelievable amount of people. And we have to provide schooling for them, often health care, often language skills. This is not colonial America. The country is already bankrupt. We need to have a more sensible program.
I gotcha, Gary. And Harry, people have been noting that Democrats, the Democratic Party, not that long ago were a little shy about immigration reform, worried it could lose them votes. They seem to be more on board, more pro-immigration, against deportation. Are there a lot of people out there, do you think, like Gary, who might be Democrats but not completely into the immigration reform issue?
Well, to me, it's so interesting, right? If you look at the polling again on individual issues such as deportations, building the wall, DACA, you go so on and so forth, you see that over the past few years, in fact, there has been movement towards the, say, more pro-immigration position, right? But in fact, if you look at, Republican primary electorates and you look at how people have voted at large and you look at polls that ask more broadly about immigration, you do in fact see that Republicans are more than holding their own despite the fact that the electorate has become much more diverse over the past few years, which does in fact suggest that there have been some people who have been persuaded by the Republican line of argument. And so I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk for Democrats, despite them perhaps believing it is, looking at these individual poll issues and believing, hey, as this country becomes more diverse, especially as there are more immigrants who become part of the American fabric, Latinos in particular, we're going to gain votes. But if you look at the past election results over the last 5 years, I think it's hard to argue that, in fact, maybe Republicans have a pretty valid point of view in the minds of many Americans.
Thanks for that call. And we'll go to another one now from Jeremy in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I believe this is really a golden opportunity for the Republican Party in regards to the immigration reform. If they choose to let this just fall off and do absolutely nothing, which I'm afraid is going to happen, they're missing an opportunity to be able to pull and draw in a mass amount of workers that within the next decade, the United States is going to be in dire need of. It's already happening around the world. Countries around the world are already soliciting to other impoverished nations or lower, lesser nations and trying to bring in people to come in and work for their factories and do the skilled works that they don't have a workforce to draw from. So,
Jeremy, thanks a lot for that call. And Harry, Jeremy sees this as a golden opportunity for Republicans to take a stand. He sees looking for bringing in workers into the country and Republicans being at the vanguard of that. Do you see it as that? Is it an opportunity?
Well, certainly a lot of Republican lawmakers and a lot of economic conservatives see it that way. You know, a lot of business leaders who have traditionally been Republican have been much more pro-immigration than perhaps some others within the Republican Party. So they certainly agree with that caller's point of view. The one thing I will say is that the Republican Party that is right now is not necessarily the same Republican Party that it was 15 or 20 years ago. It's a lot more working class, at least in comparison to the electorate overall. And so it's one of these interesting sort of juggling acts that Republican lawmakers have to go through whereby they have to satisfy both their donor base and perhaps that voter base that helped put Donald Trump in the White House.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Harry Enten from 538.com, looking at some of the top stories out of national politics this week. Harry, I wanted to ask about a topic near and dear to your heart. You wrote recently a piece on how to spot fake or misleading polls. What should we be on the lookout for?
Well, you know, this is I spent a long time investigating this firm that put out a poll in the state, a quote-unquote poll that a quote-unquote firm that put out a poll in the state of Michigan regarding Kid Rock's Senate run, and it turns out there was a lot of shady stuff going on with that particular firm. And in response to that, I wrote a second piece in which I said, here are a list of 10 things you can read it on our website that people should keep an eye out on. But I think the most basic thing is, have you ever heard of this polling company? And are there people who are willing to put their name behind that poll, right? We know Gallup. We know Pew. You know, we know these polling firms in the state of Wisconsin. Obviously, there's the Marquette Law School poll with Charles Franklin. We know Charles Franklin. But this particular polling firm, Delphi Analytica, nobody, no real person was willing to put their name behind that poll. And I think that is the number one thing that we should keep an eye out on, is if you have never heard of this pollster and there are no real people associated with the poll, then you should be very, very suspicious of them.
Okay, so switching to polls that you do put your money behind, 538, so let's look at President Trump's polling numbers. A lot of stuff going on for the president. There's been Charlottesville and his role there. There's the pardon of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. What's happened to the president's approval during all that?
Well, you know, obviously the longer-term trend, I should point out, is that Trump's approval rating has seemed to decline, you know, from, say, the mid-40s at the beginning of his presidency to the mid-30s now. But over the last few weeks, despite all of those different things occurring, Trump's approval rating has stayed fairly steady at around 37-38%. Perhaps it's up a little bit over the last week or two. I would say that's probably because of Trump's response to Hurricane Harvey. Americans have certainly approved of that in very large numbers. It could also be the case that by focusing in on Harvey, it takes our Americans' eyes off of perhaps some other actions that Trump takes that perhaps wouldn't be nearly as popular, such as the Arpaio pardon. But overall, Trump's approval rating over the past few weeks has been fairly stable, which perhaps is something Trump will take, given that the longer-term trend has been for it to decline.
And I know this is a question you've been asking at 538, you and your colleagues there. Is there a floor where President Trump's approval just isn't going to go any lower no matter what?
Well, I'll tell you, there probably is, right? But we don't know where that floor is, and I would argue that most of the polling that we look at suggests that he's still got a while to go before that floor is actually hit. It's probably in the mid-20s. That's where it is for most presidents. Remember Richard Nixon, even after he, or right as on the verge of him getting impeached, still managed to get an approval rating of about 24-25%. So I would say that Donald Trump still has a ways to go before hitting that floor, but obviously it becomes a little bit more difficult to lose points on your approval rating because right now we're really getting into the Republican base.
And so, Harry, as we move on from that, let's look at Congress and what they've got ahead of them. It's a packed schedule. There's the debt ceiling and defense bill, the tax code, rewriting that, DACA with Congress, and maybe action by President Trump. Is it likely that Congress can actually get through all that?
No, I mean, they're not going to get through all of it. You know, they're going to pass the things that need to get passed. Spending bills are the top priority because if you don't, you know, cover your bills, then that's a big problem. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is a Republican Congress that had enough problems even getting a health care bill through both the House and the Senate, despite the fact that Republicans had run on that, replacing Obamacare. So, no, I don't think that they're going to get through all of the things that you've listed, and that's part of the reason perhaps why I'd be a little bit more skeptical than most that DACA will eventually get passed, because it's just so difficult to find a majority of representatives and a majority of senators and then to get Trump to sign on to any one piece of legislation.
Do you think we're going to see a lot of old-fashioned horse trading and log rolling? We've seen, you know, debt ceiling and hurricane relief. We've heard talk about we'll do DACA, but only if we get border wall funding. Is there going to be a lot of that kind of deal-making, whether successful or not, attempted?
I think that that's one of the ways that they're certainly going to, you know, they're going to certainly try to attempt that. Of course, attempting it and making it successful is a whole different thing. I will point out one final thing is the disappearance of earmarks has really made the horse trading much more difficult because when it comes down to it, Republicans and Democrats just believe in different things. And if you believe in different things and you're not willing to move, it's awfully difficult to get legislation passed.
So looking at DACA, just zooming in there for a second, the president essentially gave Congress, said, hey, you better do something in 6 months or I might step in. What does that mean? What do you expect that the president would do and how would Congress, you know, receive that sort of comment from him?
Well, I would say I don't know what the president would do because he just ended DACA. So what would he do in 6 months? But of course, he may come up with some idea on tomorrow's bed when he wakes up. But, you know, I do think that Congress probably doesn't like the idea, especially Republican leaders in Congress, of Trump encroaching on their turf. Republican leaders have for a long time argued that they were the power keepers in Washington, and certainly a lot of members of the Tea Party, which have been growing in the United States House especially, have certainly argued that the Congress needs to grab back some of the power that the presidency has taken over the last few presidents. So I don't necessarily think that they like Trump saying, hey, you better do something or else. They probably want to say, hey, Trump, let us deal with our own business.
Harry, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. First, Wisconsin is facing a shortage of home care workers, the people who provide a variety of in-home services for many seniors, people with disabilities, or people with long-term illness.
A survey from the Survival Coalition of Wisconsin Disability Organizations found a sizable majority of people in need of those services had trouble finding enough workers, and in many cases that led to missed meals and medical appointments and to negative health outcomes.
As we've heard on Central Time, home care work is often demanding and not highly paid, which can make it hard to keep workers in the profession and leads to high turnover and inconsistent care.
Our next guests are part of an effort to change things through a cooperative business model for home health care.
Ann Reynolds is executive director of the University of Wisconsin Center for Cooperatives. Ann, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
And Tracy Dudzinski is an HR coordinator for Cooperative Care. She's based in Wautoma. Tracy, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Tracy, let's start with the basics because there's a lot of different kinds of care out there. What do home care workers do?
Well, at our co-op, we go in and help with bathing, shopping, cleaning, laundry, meal preparation, medication reminders, transportation to doctor's appointments, all those things that help people stay in their home.
And can you talk about some of the demands and challenges of the job and the kind of pay workers across the industry outside of your own organization might be facing?
Low pay for sure. And the demands are you have to be able to think quickly on your feet, problem solve, because you're working alone. You don't have direct supervision. It's it is demanding work. I mean, sometimes you feel like a doctor, a nurse, a lawyer, a counselor, all those things. You need to be really versatile and able to do different things.
And we were talking about that shortage of workers many people are facing. Is that something you see here in the state?
Yes, definitely. Actually, here at Cooperative Care, that is the only thing that is limiting our growth is being able to find enough workers. We're actually turning away business.
And Ann, let's bring the cooperative angle into this now. What does it mean in home care or whatever field, what does it mean to be a cooperative?
Well, it's basically cooperatives are organizations that are owned by the people who actually use the services rather than the investors. So in the case of cooperative care, the owners are the people who use the services by being employed at cooperative care. And they benefit from the cooperative both by their wages that they receive and their benefits, but also by having a voice in the decision-making around the cooperative. So in cooperatives, the people who actually use the services and are the owners serve on the board of directors and direct management and policy at that business.
And leading up to this conversation, I talked to people from the National AARP and other groups who are working on using the cooperative model nationwide. Can you talk about why people are seeing this as a potential solution for a lot of the problems in home care?
Yeah, it's a really difficult industry, as Tracy said, and there are demographics are really kind of against us because there is increasing need. The baby boomers, as they're aging, want to stay in their homes. Home care provides essential services so that they can do that. But at the same time, we have fewer and fewer working people in many counties, especially rural areas where the aging population is really creating difficulty attracting a workforce in a field which can be incredibly rewarding but also is underpaid. So we're seeing that nationally, and cooperatives, because it puts workers in a position of making decisions for themselves, are seen as one of the potential real answers to this kind of conundrum about providing good home care services.
We're talking about home care in Wisconsin and around the country, and the idea of a cooperative model to help bring people into the profession and keep them there. Ann Reynolds is with us from the UW Center for Cooperatives. Tracy Dudzinski also with us from Cooperative Care. And Tracy, talk about how this works on a day-to-day basis. What is different about working for Cooperative Care versus another home care agency?
Well, here at Cooperative Care, the owners, the people doing the work, have a say in how the business is run. We have a core group of dedicated owners that will do what needs to be done. Very seldom do we miss a visit. Very seldom are our shifts not covered. If we say we're going to be there, we have someone there. We make it work. We believe we provide a higher quality service because our workers are vested in the success of their business.
We hear a lot about turnover in the home care industry, where people don't stick around in the same job for a long time, and that means clients see different people who have to kind of learn the ropes of dealing with that individual. Do you see less turnover when you have this cooperative model?
We actually are lower than the industry standard. I can tell you we have 6 original founding members. We were founded in 2001 that are still here working as caregivers.
And how much have you grown since that initial group of 6 people?
Well, worker-wise, owner-wise, we're down a little bit, but I can tell you client-wise, we serve about 200 clients, provide about 1,000 service hours a week with approximately 40 caregivers.
And what kind of voice do workers for cooperative care have in decision-making? That would usually be, you know, the owner or the manager or what have you.
Anytime they have a concern or think of a way things may work better, they are more than encouraged to come to the board of directors to bring that before the board. We do ad hoc committees to solve problems. They can serve on a committee. They can run for the board of directors and have a say in how the business is run and in the direction we're going to go.
And Anne, talk about how you're involved in this. I imagine that somebody trying to invent a co-op on their own would risk trying to reinvent the wheel again and again. Are there a lot of lessons from other kinds of co-ops that have applied for home care?
Yeah, that is part of our role, is to bring those lessons, learn best practices from other cooperatives around the country, not just home care co-ops, but co-ops that are owned by farmers or business people or consumers and grocery co-ops. All of them need to have good governance practices. They need to understand the business itself so that they can make strategic decisions. And one of our roles with cooperative care has been actually right from the founding of the co-op to be there as needed, to provide training to the board, to connect them with other cooperatives so that they can learn from the both mistakes and successes of other similar organizations. And it is an interesting thing. A lot of people are skeptical about co-ops. Can the workers really run the business? But we've seen the success in many, many industries, and it absolutely can happen, but it does need support and education, just as with any kind of business or organization that where people are trying to do something that is challenging, and home care is definitely a challenging industry.
And Anne, do we see people around the nation looking at what's going on here in Wisconsin when it comes to home care cooperatives?
Yeah, definitely. We're part of a nationwide coalition that meets monthly. Tracy's involved with that, too. We are sharing information. There's a cooperative home care conference that started last year and is being supported by AARP and other organizations. So the network of people around the country that are interested in this is growing, and they're trying different models. Some of these businesses work for agencies and provide services for people that are receiving Medicaid and other state support, and others are starting businesses where private individuals pay for the home care. So they range from tiny little organizations of maybe 5 or 10 employees to cooperative home care associates in the Bronx, which has over 2,500 employees.
And Tracy, I want to talk about the work a little more. When we've talked about this before, we've had people call in and say, I love this work. It's really meaningful. You connect with people, you're making a difference in their lives, but it is demanding and it's hard to do. It's hard to keep doing over the years at this low pay rate. The people you work with, I mean, are these people who are committed to the kind of care you're providing?
Yep, I would say they are committed. It, everybody always says it takes somebody special to do this kind of work. I would agree with that. The low wages kind of stink, but I can tell you for this line of work in our area, we are one of the highest paying agencies in the area. 71 cents of every dollar we make goes back to our caregiver, and that's because we own the company. We're going to take care of ourselves, not line the pocket of some big CEO.
We're talking about home care work in Wisconsin. There's a shortage of workers with often low pay and high turnover. Our guests say a cooperative model can help. Anne Reynolds is with us from the UW Center for Cooperatives, and Tracy Dudzinski is an HR coordinator for Cooperative Care.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. Have you done home care work? What are the conditions and the pay like? Do you rely on home care for yourself or a family member? And have you had trouble finding someone to do that work? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And right now we're picking up our conversation about home care work and a cooperative model that aims to avoid staff turnover, provide better working conditions, and give more consistent care to clients.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in home care? What are the challenges you face? Do you work in a cooperative type of home care setting like we're talking about? Are you a client of a home care provider? How important is that for you? What kind of care do you need? Is it good to see the same person day after day as much as possible? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers. Tom is with us in Cedarburg. Tom, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say that my sister, who lost her husband in 08, has been doing home care since around 09. And at that time, she was able to get full-time work with moderate benefits. But in the last 3 or 4 years, the companies have gone to part-time and have cut the hours and, you know, no benefits. And so because of that, even though my sister enjoys what she's doing, she's looking to do something else.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. And Tracy, as I understand, a lot of home care providers, they're in kind of a financial crunch. They can only charge so much. Federal reimbursements are low or non-existent for a lot of services. Do you face that kind of financial crunch at Cooperative Care?
I would say yes, we do. Our reimbursement rates are not sufficient for what we do. We do state-funded care, and we also have private pay. So we are trying to change our ratio of clients more towards private pay, but we don't turn anybody away based on their funding source.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. And Ann, is this something that you help cooperatives in home care or other fields deal with? I mean, every business faces its own unique financial situation. Do you help manage that sort of thing for a co-op?
Yeah, it's really a dilemma, and a lot of it does come down to those reimbursement rates. As Tracy said, certainly businesses can become more efficient, and we're definitely seeing applications and use of scheduling, you know, programs and things like that to help make the administrative time less and the time in the home more. But there's only so much that can be done when the federal rates are really stagnant. And of course, as was said, people are looking for living wages and they're looking for benefits, and they can sometimes get those in other fields. So they're leaving home care, which is too bad.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Otto in Baraboo. Otto, hi.
Hello. Say, I appreciate the concept of the co-op, and I know you made the one comment I thought that was excellent, is you're not lining the pockets of a CEO and you're getting the employees involved. I was wondering, is there or has there any been talk of maybe creating a state indentured apprenticeship program for CNAs or caregivers to have a little bit more, I guess, incentive to stay in the field because they know that their wages would progress as they step each year up and then could have like a final, like a journeyman type living wage.
Otto, thanks for the call. So let's talk about the training over the long term, Tracy. I don't think there's anything like that sort of apprenticeship, but can you talk about training and developing people in the field of home care?
Sure. We actually hire people without any experience. We use the Wisconsin Personal Services Association direct care competency training. So it's a lot of client-specific training that where they come in with no experience at our starting wage, and then they can work up to a higher wage by completing this training. And we hire people with experience. Not only as a caregiver, because I started here and in the field as a caregiver, I worked my way up now into a office position, but our office people have all done that. We still go out and cover shifts when necessary. So the opportunity for advancement is here.
Otto, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Annie on the line in Platteville. Annie, hi.
Hi. I've been on both sides of this. I did home health care for about 4 or 5 years. This was several years ago. And the company I worked for, which was a private company, was appalling. One of the first meetings I went to, things they covered that you can't do were borrowing money from your clients. not coming to your client's home to take a nap. Things that are common sense. And apparently, these people were hired and kept on the payroll. Personally, I try to be really conscientious and do things as though I was caring for a family member. Well, now, due to an accident, I'm getting limited home care myself. And I've got to tell you, the workers I've had have just been abysmal. Anything they do has to be redone as far as housework. I have friends that come in the same day and have to redo it. And they just don't seem to care. And I think that could go to the way they're treated by some of these private companies. This co-op model sounds amazing.
Annie, thanks a lot for that call. Annie's been on it from both sides. Tracy, it sounds like Annie has experienced very low standards of care, hopefully lower than normal. What kind of standards are you shooting for there?
We aim for perfection. Obviously, we don't always hit that. We tell our clients when we go out and do our assessments, if there's any concerns, please call us right away. We want to deal with things before they become a problem. They are pretty good about doing that, and we problem solve right away and try to fix problems as they occur.
Annie, thanks for calling. We are talking about home care in Wisconsin and around the country. Talk about a cooperative model to try to help tackle a worker shortage problem, working conditions problems, and trying to provide more consistent care. Tracy Dudzinski is with us from Cooperative Care. She's based in Wautoma. Ann Reynolds from the UW Center for Cooperatives. We'll go next to Jane in Livingston. Jane, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just going to share the experiences of being a home health aide for 29 years. And what I liked about it was that there's a variety of people and of illnesses that we would walk into, you know, and get the experience of knowing a little bit about their history. And just a lot of them really wanted just company, you know, because they're very lonely staying home alone with their illness, and that's all they got to think about. So not only did we provide care physically, but we were there emotionally, mentally for them, too. So I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I had everything from hospice to Alzheimer's to quadriplegics to deaf people, blind people. So it was quite an experience for me, and I am really glad that I had that as a career.
Jane, thanks for that call. And Tracy, that reminds me of something you said earlier, that the training is client-specific. Every client is an individual person with individual needs. How important is it to try to have a consistent rotating staff of people so you're not having to relearn each client every time?
That's like major important. We actually try not to have just one caregiver in a household. We always try to train at least two people. So we always have a natural backup in case that person would call in sick. We do job shadowing. If you've never been to a client before and their cares are a little more than normal, we would definitely job shadow you in there until you're comfortable doing those cares on your own.
Jane, thanks for the call. And as we start to wrap up, do you see room for growth in the cooperative model in home care here in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. I think we've got this, you know, it's wonderful to hear sort of the positive reception to this idea. It is an idea, and it Cooperative Care and Tracy have been incredibly generous with their time in sharing this model. So I think it's got a lot of potential.
If somebody out there wanted to try to take the plunge and start a co-op, maybe in an area where cooperative care isn't working, like what would be a first step to do something like that?
They could certainly give the Center for Cooperatives a call. We're on the web. If you put in cooperatives or UW-Madison, you'll find it. I can give you my phone number at work. It's 608-263-4775. You're welcome to call me, and we'll connect you with people that can help out. So glad to assist.
We'll leave it there for now. Ann, thanks a lot for joining us today. And Tracy, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Tracy Dudzinski, HR coordinator for Cooperative Care. She's based in Wautoma. Also with us in the studio, Ann Reynolds, executive director of the University of Wisconsin Center for Cooperatives. We've been talking about home care. It's an industry a lot of people rely on to be able to stay in their homes. It's been hard to find workers, pay generally low, conditions not always great. We've been talking about a cooperative model to try to create a more sustainable kind of home care in Wisconsin. Still time for you to share your thoughts and experiences on this idea of cooperatives and home care and your experiences with home care, whether you've worked in that field, whether you rely on home care services for yourself or maybe a family member, or like one of our callers, you've been on both sides of home care. You can head over to the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us your story while you're there.
Parts of Wisconsin may get a rare shot at a big light show tonight with a chance to see the Northern Lights.
The sun did some work on Labor Day and sent out a burst of plasma in a coronal mass ejection. That means a lot of stuff. And one of those things is that here on Earth, some of us could get to see the Aurora Borealis.
Usually you need to be further north to see the Northern Lights, but this time around, we actually have a chance. The latest predictions from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, show the line of peak performance possibly going along the Illinois-Wisconsin border.
Yeah, we'll give you one warning, though. It is never a sure thing when the Northern Lights are involved. There's some random chance at work. Clouds could block the whole thing. A bright moon could outshine the lights. I've never seen them, have you?
I have seen them, and it's almost worse because I've seen them. I keep trying to see them again. I go out at midnight or 1 a.m. when I see that there is a solar flare or something like that, and I've yet to see them. Mostly I drive around in the country.
All right, so I may, and it's too bright if you're in a town, probably, unless they're really bold and striking. Mm-hmm. Maybe this time. Well, good luck to you if you go out and look for it. This is Central Time.